Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Steve Buckley, and welcome again to another show of Open Government Radio. It's Tuesday, April 13th, and for those of you who are listening and who would like to follow along with the discussion, of course, you can just listen or go to ustransparency.com, which is my blog, and we've put some of the things we'll be talking about there, some of the links and a description of the show. And of course, if you're just listening, then we'll try to explain as much as possible. And today's show, before I go on to today's show, I just wanted to get a few announcements out of the way, so to speak. If you are, and there are links to this on, at ustransparency.com for today's show, April 7th, 13th. There is a participation camp is coming up this weekend, April 17th and 18th in Washington, D.C. There's a link there. It's participationcamp.org, so that's easy to rattle off. Coming up on April 28th is Open Government Directive Workshop. That's number 4 in the series, and that's on Wednesday, April 28th, and that'll be taking place at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And there is a link there. That would be link number 11 on the blog. And let's see. Of course, if you want to keep up with other late-breaking information in between radio shows, you can subscribe to the Open Government Directive Google group. That's at the very bottom of the list of links there. And it's opt-in, opt-out, so you can get in and out in case you don't like what you're getting. And there's 137 members that are subscribers to the Google group, and that's something that I moderate. It is a moderated effort, and that is relatively light traffic, but I'm expecting traffic to pick up a lot more in the coming weeks with all that's been happening. Certainly, last week we were anticipating the release of the open government plans by all the various federal agencies, at least those that were required, and a few that are independent agencies but have decided to do that anyway, and that's in response to the open government directive issued by the White House back in December, and there are links down there to that. That would be link number 12 and 13, yeah. So, now, on to the business of what we're going to talk about today. Now that we have something to really sink our teeth into as far as reviewing the open government plans and figuring out if they comply with the requirements of the Open Government Directive, that's the title and topic for today, Review of Open Government Plans, Version 1.0. And I say 1.0 because that's been thrown out as by the last week, Lucas Gioffi spoke with us on Open Government Radio about a pre-release meeting that he went to at the White House Conference Center, and a lot of the people were describing these as version 1.0, the idea being this is not the last word on these versions. All of these plans had the same timeline, and which was 120 days, which is lightning speed for the federal bureaucracy, I can tell you, as a former bureaucrat, federal bureaucrat myself. So the idea that these are just version 1.0 and that they're open to input from people inside and outside the government. So anyway, but joining me today is Jen Gustetic, who's an associate at Phase One Consulting Group. There's a link there to Jen's LinkedIn page under her name, and also to Phase One Consulting Group. And anyway, she's been involved in some of these plants, but I'll turn to her and let her explain what it is that she's been up to. And certainly I don't want to, I know she has a certain amount of confidentiality in her work, so anytime, Jen, that I'm straying into an area that you don't feel comfortable answering, then please let me know and we'll back off. But whatever you're comfortable with. But go ahead, Jen. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself and Phase One Consulting and what you've been up to.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. First, I'll apologize if my voice is a little rough and I've got a bit of a cough. I think I'm coming down with a cold. So not the best for a radio show, but just bear with me if I'm coughing in the middle of the show. Apologize for that ahead of time.
Okay.
I started off my career actually at the Transportation Security Administration as a federal employee several years ago, working on their grant programs, and was involved in standing up one of the first secure government blogs, so not one that's generally open to the public to read, but one that's available for the stakeholders for those grant programs to read, because we were dealing with sensitive vulnerability, infrastructure vulnerability information. So we wanted to have a way and a forum to talk more extensively and in depth with our stakeholders from across the country about transportation security issues throughout the year, not just when we were launching grant programs. And that experience really got me intrigued in the whole concept of how sometimes technology, what's possible with technology, actually not just sometimes, a lot of the time, what's possible with technology is really incredibly difficult for the government to implement, especially with all of the policy and legal considerations that we have to take into account. I think in standing up that one blog, the one blog at TSA, I think I met with about 80 of TSA's lawyers, not joking, on every legal issue that one could possibly imagine. And that was kind of at the beginning of when blogging was starting to happen for the federal government, at least. So there were still, we were trying to put our heads around a lot of the implications of doing this kind of public consultation and discussion. But
that was way back in when?
Way back when. That's, 3 years ago. It's not terribly long ago, but yeah. It's long ago in the scheme of getting, federal blogs, especially in the secure realm, up and running. We did a large survey to see what else was out there in terms of secure blogs, and really didn't find much of anything other than Intellipedia, which isn't really a blog. It's more of a kind of a crowdsourcing tool than it is a blog. So we really didn't have many lessons learned there to learn from when we were trying to restrict access, because whenever the government says, hey, you can't get in, you've got to have pretty good reason why you can't get in, the general public. So that took a lot of thinking. But I had my challenge at TSA, and it was time to move on about a year ago, and I moved on to Phase One Consulting Group, and my primary client right now is the Department of Transportation. I've been working with them for the last year or so, but primarily the last 9 months on open government-related issues. Phase One has a lot of other clients in the open government space that we've worked very, very closely with on them thinking through their open government plans and kind of posturing themselves to not just put together a plan, but really make sure that they were moving more towards being progressively more transparent, participatory, and collaborative, knowing that in 3 months or 4 months you can possibly, run the gambit and be completely open after 4 months. Also to say that doesn't mean that a lot of these agencies aren't already being open in a lot of the things they're doing. It's just trying to make them more open using technologies that are available now that weren't available, a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So really thinking through some of those issues. So right now I'm primarily working with DOT, and I'm excited to be able to chat with you today, Steve, a little bit about some of the plans that came out last week and some of the considerations and issues moving forward in order to make sure that these plans aren't just another document that are released every 2 years that become a compliance exercise, but really are guiding visions to try to help these agencies become progressively more open and not just this be an exercise in writing, but actually doing.
Okay. Well, before we go into that, I want to make sure you get a proper plug for Phase One Consulting. Under the link there, I was looking around on their page right now, and there's a blog somewhere. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
The Transformation in the Federal Sector blog. It's in the, if you go to Phase One's website, it's www.phaseonecg.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link for the Transformation in the Federal Sector blog. We do a lot of blogging on there, our whole open government team, about the host of open government issues. And so I would recommend folks, just for at least background information, can go there and read a lot about some of the high-level things to consider when doing any planning, when you're trying to become progressively more open, the types of things to consider. So it's not just about legal issues. It's not just about the technology. It's about a whole heck of a lot more than that, including current communication channels, your culture, your organization, where you're already participating and collaborating with your stakeholders. It's about security issues, both from the CNA perspective, so certification and accreditation of your systems, all the way to mashup issues when you're putting out different types of data. So security means a lot of different things. It's about infrastructure. What's this going to do to your organization's bandwidth and your network when you try to bring on these tools that use a lot of bandwidth? And performance. I mean, I think one of the things that was left out for quite a while and became part of the discussion this time around in the Open Government Directive was, how are we going to measure how we're doing in these things moving forward? And a lot of times it was in the past just thinking about, well, what tool can we launch? And since we can, the default saying, well, if we can, then we should. But the default now should be, just because we can doesn't mean we should, because that's not necessarily what makes sense to ultimately meeting the strategic goals of our organization. And I would say that the two things that are that we discuss on our blog, and we kind of have been helping our clients think through to a little bit higher degree and higher level importance than I've heard in other places, is that it's really about alignment with your strategic plan, and it's really about performance management for your mission. You can do all these things, and that's great. You can launch a blog. You can have a Twitter account. But if it's not tying into the core mission of your organization, then why are you doing it? And it should be improving your core mission activities. For example, DOT has always, core missions have always been safety of our nation's infrastructure and infrastructure being in a state of good repair. So if we've got all this open government related activity going on in areas that we know we can do, like having Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts and all these things out of the wazoo, but they don't necessarily tie into our core mission areas, we're spending our limited resources on things that aren't necessarily helping us to meet our mission better. So it's really thinking up front, where do you use these tools that they make the most sense to get the most value in improving your performance and also helping you to achieve your core mission? Because the government has never been told to do everything and do the world. I mean, we have a specific mission that's authorized by statute, and we need to make sure that we're doing that mission the best that we possibly can. And so we shouldn't just be doing the things we can do. We should be doing the things that we should do. So that being said, there's a lot of those kinds of discussions and concepts that are on that blog. So I encourage folks to go and just read through it and peruse through it, and you can comment and see some of the discussions. We have a lot of regular readers that comment on there, Bev Godwin, Gwen Costin. A lot of folks are on there reading and commenting. So we'd appreciate any thoughts you have. And if Phase One looks like a company that is interesting to you, we're also hiring. We're consistently hiring. You can feel free to reach
out. And you can subscribe to the blog by email.
Yes, exactly.
So not just RSS. I was just noticing at one of the open government plans earlier this morning that, yes, you can follow them, but you have to know RSS.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me, I think I read, I don't know, that only 20% or 30% of people online use RSS. So, but it's the typical type of thing. I know this is from the very first time that they started putting on websites. It was designed by somebody with a T1 connection and a giant monitor, and now who uses RSS and assumes that everybody else has the same setup that they do? And so then finally people would call. Somebody finally got back to them that in the early days that, hey, some of us, most people have a dial-up, so please don't put giant pictures of the Secretary of Education on the homepage. because it takes 15 minutes to load. And so now it's with the RSS. I'm trying to get through to the people that, hey, love to follow what you're doing, but I don't do RSS. And a lot of other people don't, so it's not just me. But anyway, so I'm glad to see that you have the email address. It's easy to follow, and I encourage people to subscribe to the your blog there. Yes, and I agree. I guess I keep wanting to point people back to the original memorandum that people, it's easy to get caught up in so much activity that it's good from time to time to just stop and stick your head up and go, no, wait a minute, where were we going? And certainly I think the the memorandum that the president wrote on his first full day in office, I think people need to go back and taste it or read it for the first time, just like cornflakes, because it does say, you know, the reason they're doing this is, you know, the whole idea is to make the government work better, promote efficiency and effectiveness in government. And in order to do that, then it's better to engage the people who you're trying to help. And in order to do that, you have to be transparent, participatory, and collaborative. And in order to do, you know, and so a lot of this is, you know, like a big weekend project where it's like you want to start painting something, but in order to do that, you have to prepare this. And in order, you know, and a lot of times you get the Sunday night and you're painting on Sunday night because it took you all weekend to get ready to do the painting. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, it's like that where and a lot of people, I use that painting analogy because a lot of people I know who are amateur painters, I used to paint in the summertime in college, and some people just want to start painting. Others just open the can and start painting, and it's like, wait a minute, we gotta get this ready. We gotta take the hardware off. We gotta tape this off. We gotta scrape off the old paint, all of which is not fun because painting is more fun than scraping and preparing and all the other stuff. And so when I see, you know, like I said, I'm a former federal employee, so I know that expediency is a big motivator or rule of the current culture there, and so I can understand everybody wanting to go do now. But at the same time, it sounds like you and Phase One Consulting have been providing some caution about not confusing activity with results, which is, I guess that's a concern now that all these plans have been released, that there needs to be a way of figuring out if we're on the track that we think we're on, and we don't just push all the buttons and hope something happens. So anyway, but as far as what's your general, I have not looked at all of the plans in depth. I've looked at perhaps half a dozen, maybe a little more. How many of you scanned yourself or been involved, I mean, semi-knowledgeable about or familiar with?
Well, I've probably scanned maybe 6 or 7 of them at this point. There was actually a lot of interagency sharing that occurred as well before the plans were due to allow folks to kind of work together through the OMB working group and also to just kind of leverage some of the best practices and some of the work that had been done. If one organization was way stronger in, for example, the data transparency requirements, to allow the other departments to kind of see what they'd done and see if any of that, you know, is possible for them. But I do think that one of the things that is really tough with evaluating these plans is that so many organizations are at various levels of maturity already in each of these areas, and you can see some organizations like EPA, for example, that have been doing public engagement for years, and they are good at it. They are really good at it. So when you put up EPA's open government site, www.epa.gov/open, we've got this really cool timeline up on their site that Jeff Relivi and his team put together that I think is built on top of, I forget what the tool was, but if you pull it up, it, Dipity, maybe, I think it was, pulling it up on my computer right now. It has this timeline back decades, not years, decades, talking about the types of open government related activities that they've been doing since they started collaborating and participating in a way where those activities were recorded. And I think that that actually creates a really, really good illustration for folks to realize that, you know, open government is not this brand new initiative that has never happened before. I mean, this is something that we're moving down the spectrum of making the government more open, but during the last administration there was eGov, and during the administration before that there was reinventing government, and we've been thinking about these issues of how do we make the government more transparent, participatory, and collaborative for quite a while. And in fact, in the eGov Act of 2002, there's language in that act that is still law, by the way, that requires the government to be more transparent, participatory, and collaborative. So that was the kind of the base for all the eGov efforts that had happened in the past moving forward. But OpenGov uses a lot of the same principles. It's just there's a bunch of new technologies that can really help us to get a lot further down that spectrum. And the Obama administration is also pushing hard to, I think, fix some of the policy issues that have also been in our way. I mean, there's been technology that we really haven't had that's enabled us to get so far down the spectrum, but these new technologies that are out there are just, you know, creating so many new opportunities for the government to engage with folks and to make information not just more transparent, but also contextualize it to the mission of the department a lot better. And with the policy issues that they're helping us work through, so things like the PRA guidance that they released last week, the Paperwork Reduction Act guidance, as well as the thinking they've done through prizes and competitions, that policy thinking is, it may not get the same level of discussion as the technology thinking does, but I mean, amongst people that are practitioners, yeah, PRA gets a lot of discussion. And that document was like, was incredibly interesting to have come out last week and give us some new flexibility in what we can do in terms of getting feedback from the public with some of these tools. But, you know, open government, I think, has been framed in this way where all of a sudden we're supposed to be getting this directive, and in 4 months we're supposed to be releasing all of our data. And when I say we, I mean the federal government. We're supposed to be releasing all of our data in open formats, and we're supposed to be participating on every engagement, and we're supposed to be collaborating on every decision. And that's a great vision to have, but I think that that's all within the context of the limited resources that the federal government has. Really well-executed participation and collaboration opportunities take a lot of staff to execute. You can't just stand up a tool. You can't just stand up a tool and expect great discussion to happen. You got to have community managers, and you have to have people that are out there and know the community and are, you know, listening and responding and finding the nuances of the ideas. And that happens with people, not just with technology. And so I think when departments are struggling through some of this stuff, you know, where they can be more open, transparent, participatory, and collaborative, they're thinking through what are those things that I do in my department that are the most crucial to me meeting my mission, that would benefit the most from transparency, participation, and collaboration. Because at the end of the day, they get money in order to meet their mission from Congress, and they get judged by Congress and the public and how well they're meeting their mission. And the accountability side of that is also important. I mean, there's a lot of groups out there that they just want to see data transparency and the accountability side, like that is their number one priority and everything else is a distant second. So, for example, they want to see executive calendars and they want to see budget information in a dashboard fashion, just like D.C. CTO government or the Washington, D.C. government has done, which is a phenomenal dashboard. If you haven't looked at that yet, you should check that out. They've done a really phenomenal job at putting up their budget information for the D.C. government. But there's so much that could be done in open government, and the struggle is what is the highest priority activities to do for your organization to meet its mission better? And how do you implement that within existing limited resources? Because there's no budget for open government. There's no money. It hasn't been allocated by Congress. There's no fund that lives at OMB that they're funding these initiatives. These are all things that are found within existing budgets. And for folks that aren't familiar with the budget process, it's not that easy to find money for things that you just decide you want to do willy-nilly that Congress didn't appropriate you funds for. So I think some of the biggest struggles that people are going through right now are two things. First, budget and resources. And second, what is the true direction that the Obama administration wants the agencies to push towards within the vast scope of open government? I mean, the scope of the directive is huge. So within that vast scope, where do they really want to see progress? Because you can't possibly do everything within there exceptionally well unless you are such a mature agency already that you're building on such a firm foundation that you can do, like HHS's plan, it's phenomenal on a lot of levels. Todd Park and the folks over there have done a great job, especially with the data transparency section. But they have a really robust data architecture and a really robust and mature data framework that they're working from at HHS. So they have a lot of they've been able to leverage the great work that they've already done to do even better work, which is incredible. But a lot of departments aren't that far advanced yet. So you see a lot of discrepancies across the plans because really a lot of the inconsistencies across how departments have handled data and enterprise architecture and how they've handled public engagement and how they've handled participation in rulemaking has been so different. And there's such wide variations in how each of the departments perform in those areas. So it's no surprise that the plans are going to vary drastically across those three areas. And you'll see some plans that are great in data transparency and not so great in collaboration. And you'll see some plans that are really great in a flagship initiative because, man, they know how to execute a program. But in terms of strategic planning, maybe not so much. It's really hard to have a home run in all of these areas unless you're working from a very, very mature foundation and you have incredible leadership. And there are a few organizations that have emerged that way out of this planning process. But it's hard, and I don't think the difficulty of that can be overstated.
Well, I think the and I do have a link to one part of the HHS plan, but if people look at the links that I have here, of course, there's link number one. I'm talking about ustransparency.com, the blog post for April 13th. And I should say that take a second here to remind people that this is Steve Buckley and Jen Gustetic. We're talking about the Open Government plans on Open Government Radio. And if you want to call in, the call-in number is 917-388-4210. And anyway, continuing on, back to the links there, there's a listing of the federal agency's open government plans. That'll take you to the that link will take you to the dashboard, and then you'll have to click on an agency's name to go to their open government page. And then hopefully someplace prominently displayed will be a link to the open government plan. And GovLoop, number two, GovLoop has a chart, but you have to be a member of GovLoop. Some people are not. And number three is a link that I had kept from last week, What Government Plans Are Missing by Andrea DeMaio. It lists some things there, one of which is measuring. And number four is where the HHS it's a link directly to the part of, and I would ask people to click on that, and we can take a quick look at that, because that to me shows really what a leading or practice is as far as offering these version 1.0 plans out for feedback for people to look at section by section. And this shows that, for instance, the section on how we will measure measure success as far as the open government, HHS's efforts. And if you pull up that page there, you can see that they, at the very bottom, you can add a comment to, and then the comments will be visible. So actually, I did leave a comment last night, and I don't see it there. So it is moderated, so people will, you know, they're checking before they push it on through to make sure you comply with their comment policy, which is, there's also a link on that page to show you what the comment policy is. But so you, that to me is the part about being open, is that they'll, it's not just an email box that you send it to and you don't know what anybody else is saying. So you could actually have a discussion thread here where I post something and then you see something about my posting that you comment on that. And so it's a lot like what they'd used before in creating and soliciting ideas from citizens and so forth.
Yeah, and to note there, Steve, a lot of folks actually have used the same idea scale tool that they used for the first round, like you're saying, to actually get public input on their on putting together the open government plan. They're using the same idea scale tool to get feedback. Some folks, like
they just kept it open.
HHS right. and USDA kind of have their own widgets in their pages they've built, but a lot of folks are using that idea scale tool.
Well, they just left their idea scale tool open. It never closed. Like EPA, I think, is still open.
DOT just created another category. So there's the transparency category, participation, collaboration, innovation categories that were the categories from the initial solicitation that happened there for the month and a half. But they created a new category for OpenGov plan comments that folks that have comments on the plan can go and we've gotten a couple already, but can go and make comments on the plan there. And a lot of departments have followed that style, or they've kind of scrubbed the tool of all the discussion that went on in the last month and a half and created a new view that only has the open government discussion on there, the open government plan discussion on there. It depends on the department, how they handled it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, before we, if there's something you want to show us on that you'd like to point out at the or on the DOT plan, we can do that. But I just want, before we left the HHS one, this one page about that I provided the link to, how we will measure the success of open government at HHS. They're the only one that I've seen so far, and I would be very interested to find out if any other agencies have done this, because I'm not holding my breath. But the Open Government Directive does say that agencies need to come up with measures for transparency, participation, and collaboration. And, of course, in the Open Government Directive plan, one of the things they prescribed or directed agencies to do was release 3 high-value data sets by a certain date. And that's, you know, pretty – that's what they decided had something to do with transparency. And so, of course, HHS has that, not just 3, but I guess additional ones. They also talk about, and this is under the bullets where it says on this page here that I'm looking at, they have bullets under transparency, and then Freedom of Information Act or FOIA backlog of requests for information from the public. And that's, you know, I guess that's pretty indisputable. Yes, they should be doing that. I don't think anybody thinks that. Nobody's advocating for creating a bigger backlog. And I noticed my comment to them last night, which wasn't published yet, was that it says participation and collaboration, and that shouldn't really be a bullet. That should be its own on the same level as transparency. But under that, there are 2 bullets that relate to participation and collaboration as far as measures go. And they have number of opportunities for the public to provide input into the work of the department, which can cover a lot of things, and the number of HHS public-private collaborations. So that's, and then they go on. The good part is that right underneath that they say, hey, these are just a few. We're just starting, you know, not to be, you know, the only 2 ways to measure participation and collaboration. And so that to me is great that they're, first of all, that they put out anything at all, because most agencies just glossed over. They didn't put any measures, even though the Open Government Directive requires it. And but the fact that HHS is actually asking people, and so there's a place here you can talk about, well, you know, how about this? How about this indicator? How about that indicator of increased collaboration and participation? So that to me is really exciting. I'd be interested to see if others are doing that. So if anybody out there is listening knows of something similar that's going on in another agency, please let me know or join the Google group or whatever, and I'm sure these things will come to light. But
actually, Steve, DOT has done mm-hmm. performance measures as well, and they are in the plan.
Okay, well, great.
If you go to www.dot.gov/open, and then if you just click on that first link, that's DOT Open Government Plan, it'll take you to our web version. We put the plan up in both HTML and in a PDF form. PDF is easier to print out. So we put up the PDF just in case folks wanted a paper copy. But if you go to Chapter 2, you know, what you'll see in the left-hand map.
Well, I'm assuming some people have a clunky computer as mine. So we don't want to lose anyone who may be trying to keep up, including me. I just was typing that in. There is a link, like I said, to the dashboard on the blog, and from there it goes to the, let's see, we scroll down to DOT, okay, and I'm clicking on that, and that takes me to, yes, dot.gov/open, and then on that page, I guess where it says DOT Open Government Plan?
Yep, click on that link. It's the first link on the top.
At the very top.
Kind of middle. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And overview, yeah, okay. So where do I look now?
So on the left hand, you'll see a navigation that breaks down Chapter 1, Chapter 2, Chapter 3, Chapter 4, Chapter 5 of the plan.
Uh-huh.
Click on Chapter 2.
Goals, objectives, and measures. Oop, they have a typo on measures.
Yeah, I know. I just identified that and told our web team to change it.
While we were talking?
Yeah. So that should be changed right now.
Continuous feedback. It works already.
Yeah, exactly right. So if you'll see that the entire Chapter 2 is up in HTML, and at the top there's a couple hyperlinks, Section 2.1, Prioritizing Open Government Goals, Strategies, and Initiatives, and then Section 2.2, Managing DOT's Performance in Open Government Practices.
Uh-huh.
You click on Section 2.2, it'll jump you right down to that section.
Oh, slower, or further down that same page.
Yep, it's just an anchor, so it jumps you straight down. And then at the very bottom of that section, there's a table that lays out each of the DOT Open Government Goals. There's four Open Government Goals that
Table 3,
yep.
Okay.
There's four Open Government Goals that DOT went through a long process, and you can read our plan to figure out more of how we determined what our goals and objectives were going to be at the time with our strategic plan. But we developed for each goal and each objective within that goal a few sample performance measures to try to that not just tie into the objectives and the goals for open government for DOT, but those also tie up into the strategic plan. So we spent a lot, DOT spent a lot of effort on these. And there were actually probably 30 or 40 sample measures that we were looking at initially, and we weaned it down to these as the samples to include in the plan. So we went through a lot of discussions about performance measures.
And is DOT, granted, I'm sure I would have loved to have been in on those discussions, but is this still not written in stone? Is it open for now outsiders to say, well, let's change this word to that word or tweak it?
If the public has comments on what they think would actually be a better performance measure to get towards these objectives, by all means, submit them.
And how would, like I said, on the HHS, they had it right on the page there, but how would somebody do it for
I think they'd react to it the same way. Todd over at HHS, I think, would be very open to hearing folks say, you know, hey, that's a great performance measure, but I think this one would be a great complement, or, you know, that performance measure is actually not a causation performance measure. That's something that's a correlation performance measure. There's a whole bunch of people out there that are better at performance measures than, you know, I can speak for myself than I am. So everybody's open, I think, to hearing better thoughts here, because what we also know is that a lot of these performance measures are likely going to be the things that end up on an OMB version 2.0 dashboard.
Yeah.
For open government, and the last thing we want is to create performance measures that are driving progress in areas that actually create perverse outcomes, ones that we didn't want because we didn't think through the performance measures enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and that process of determining what the long-term performance measures will likely be an activity that you know, is going to happen in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not taking a wild guess, but I'm assuming that, of course, the people at HHS and Todd Park being the head of the HHS effort, but also the lead on the interagency group?
He's the lead on the leading practices portion of the work that the OMB group is doing. So Anish Chopra posted a blog post on the White House OpenGov site. I think it was either last Thursday or Friday, or Wednesday.
I tried to find that.
Yeah, and well, if you just go to the OpenGov or the OpenGov blog on the White House site, it's the first or second one down. It's right by Norm Eisen's blog post. But he actually provides a link within his blog post, Anish, to the leading practices. And there's four categories of leading practices that were developed by this OMB subgroup. That the first category is leadership, governance, and culture change. The second category is transparency. The third category is participation and collaboration. They were pushed together. And the fourth category is flagship initiatives. And the purpose of the leading practices is to try to answer the question, the very basic question, which was a very hard question to answer, which is why OMB and the White House posed it to a group of folks on the working group, is what makes one open government plan better at exceeding the requirements of the directive than another? And there's a few embedded questions in that question. First of all, how do you know if something's exceeded a requirement of the directive? And second, how do you compare different departments that may have exceeded in different areas or that may have, you know, really adhered to the spirit of, for example, the FOIA piece of transparency, but may not have the data architecture maturity in order to really have a full catalog done yet or something? And how do you make an assessment that one person's data transparency strategy is exceeds any less than someone else's? So there was a lot of discussion that went on about, well, what would be, I guess, some stretch criteria or some leading practices.
Can I interrupt you for just a second there? Uh-huh. Jen, I want to make sure that it would be very good, I think, that posting. And I'm here at the whitehouse.gov/open, and I'm looking for the one you said it was a posting. I just want to say if people are following, but particularly even myself, just keeping up with the one because I saw this posting, and now I'm trying to, and I tried to find it to put it on the link, and I will put it on the Web U.S. Transparency blog post after the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I just could, because it talks about how OMB is going to be evaluating.
Yeah, it's
May 1st,
making,
the deadline. So
it's entitled Making Government Accountable for Openness, and it's
and
on.
There it is. Okay,
yeah.
I see it. Yes, it's the second one, well, at least today it is. But, yeah, April 8th. 2:39 p.m. There's a couple of them on April 8th, but it's the one at 2:39 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Making government accountable for openness. Okay, and then I just want to make sure we're all on the same page, literally and figuratively, as far as this discussion goes. And but I guess what I was leading up to is that they will, everybody's, this interagency group is keeping in touch. They're meeting like once a week, once every other week, once a month. Do you know how often they're meeting? Or?
Yeah, they meet every other week usually, but I think the discussion moving forward is going to be how often they're going to meet moving forward since the plans are done. I don't think the discussion is that they won't, but how often.
You think it'll get more or less time? Or
I would be very surprised if it became more often.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, now that they don't have to actually meet if they're looking at each other's plans, just like if the HHS looks at DOT's performance measures and says, oh, well, we can cut and paste and borrow this and that. So, you know, that's okay. It's no trademark or no – it's all paid for by U.S. dollars, so it's okay for everybody to copy each other's leading practices, and certainly by having measures down there that DOT has put so much thought into. There's no reason for everybody to reinvent the wheel.
But at the same time, our performance measures are, to some degree, a direct result of our unique strategic goals at DOT. So it may be that some of them do translate, but maybe not all of them do, depending on what the strategic direction and goals of a different organization are. Because everyone needs to go in a direction towards becoming more open depending on what their mission is in certain areas, but how what they prioritize will likely differ based on what their strategic goals and their mission are. So,
but I would think that the common thread, and certainly I worked for 5 different federal agencies, so I know each one has different things and so forth and so on, but that there are aspects that cut across that are applicable, you know, the transparency and the participation and collaboration that should be the same no matter what agency we're talking about, and that there's, and I guess I was disappointed that the Open Government Directive did not speak to that, and it may be, in my opinion, that the Open Government Directive is 1.0, and I think maybe they even mentioned that at one point that it was not written in stone and so forth, but that to me would be the part where they say, okay, well, whatever you do, you know, this is how you measure transparency, participation, and collaboration, no matter what the agency, and this is the yardstick you use, and so forth. So things like, yes, certainly, you know, more visitors to a website. I can't think of that.
So yeah, I would agree, Steve, on the most part, except there are, I think when you get down into performance measures, a lot of the time they have to be sufficiently granular on specific subject matter areas in order to measure anything. Yeah. I mean, if it's not sufficiently granular, you're not going to be able to measure anything. I mean, there are certain things that would be great if you could measure it, but if it's not specific enough, it's going to be really hard to get any sort of baseline and actually measure progress against it. And why I say that is, you know, some of the organizations or the departments that were subject to the directive aren't even subject to all the requirements in the directive because of the authorizing language that binds those departments. So, for example, not every department had to report on their declassification programs because not every department has declassification programs.
Right, right.
Not every department was even or agency was even required to do an open government plan because they're not CFO Act agencies. So there's a lot those folks that aren't CFO Act agencies that did plans anyway, props to them. That's really incredible because it wasn't a requirement. It was something that they did because they really, really believed in the spirit of open government and were trying to get on the same ship that the rest of us that were required to be on are on the ship. But it's hard to just across the board do maybe it. So performance measures that across the board kind of get at transparency, participation, collaboration, culture change, innovation, all of those things are, I think, things we need to be striving towards, but they deserve more thought just, you know, that thinking about website traffic. You know, that might be something that works for DOT, but might not work for someone else, just website traffic as a proxy for transparency, you know?
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, and I agree with everything you just said, it will take a lot of thought. I mean, you read the Bill of Rights, for instance, for how our country is, you know, operated. There are amendments to the Constitution, actually. So, but and we're still arguing about what free speech and carrying a gun and what do they mean? So certainly, you know, you want to make sure you're as clear and as simple as possible in laying out what the most basic and fundamental things are. And Bill of Rights is probably an example of where, even though they're granular stuff, and you know, different states get to figure out what laws apply to their particular situation. But the Bill of Rights, for instance, cuts across everything, and it says, "Hey, you states can do whatever you want, but citizens have these rights, and that's it." And it applies no matter what state, and you can't take away from them. You can add to them, but you can't take away from them. So that's the type, I guess, would be analogous to a Bill of Rights or something. And that's what I was hoping, but it's hard to write. And, of course, they didn't put it in the first Constitution because it had to be amended. These were the first, you know, 10 amendments. So it's perfectly understandable that you just don't, that these things just don't pop out of somebody's head and everybody says, sure, of course. And so that, yeah, it's going to be hard, but there absolutely needs to be, in my mind, some common thing that people can point to and talk, you know, like when we talk about freedom of speech and stuff like that, everybody knows, you know, almost a lot of people can even rattle it off what the First Amendment is and stuff like that. So, That's the type of leadership. But I did want to point before we're I know we could talk for all afternoon, but I did want to point some people back to a few interesting links to before we left there, what I did ask you before, but I wasn't quite clear. So if somebody wanted to comment, for instance, on that table three, for instance, or any other part of the plan, is there a link you can point to where it talks about?
Yep. On DOT's page and on every single one of the chapter pages where it's in HTML, at the upper right-hand corner of the page, there's a share your comment button.
Right above the DOT OpenGov flag logo.
Yep, that you can hit on, and it'll take you to our IdeaSkill site, and you can make comments to your heart's content on the plan and start discussions and direct your friends and your colleagues there to continue the discussion about some of the specific parts of the plan, and we read it. So we appreciate any comments that you get that you guys send in.
You know, at some point, and even though it's great that you have that there, at some point, though, I guess I'm a little concerned that people like myself, even someone as caught up and in all of this and totally interested in open government and so forth, since it's kind of a unresolved issue of mine from the reinventing government days of the 1990s, but at some point there's citizen fatigue that, they had something last summer where you gave your votes and then there was nothing for a long time, and then wham, the open government directive falls out of the sky, but with no feedback on, or essentially no feedback on many of the ideas on why they were adopted or not adopted. And then, of course, we had this with the, all the other agencies had their own sites for getting more ideas, essentially the same thing split into 30 different places, but with less participation, arguably. I haven't done all the numbers, but I had a sense that it was not as, if anything, it was all spread out as far as people's efforts go compared to last summer. And now it's great, yes, to be able to provide feedback on the plans and so forth, but it's kind of like I'm wondering if anybody has raised, have you heard anybody saying, geez, the numbers are going down, or maybe we're asking people to keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back, and they're,
two very, very good points, Stephen, and the first of which is, who is people? And the second of which is, how much is too much? What I mean by who is people is, you say you keep asking people to come back. Well, who is the stakeholder group for open government? I mean, depending on what we're talking about for the different goals, transparency, if it's mission-related data that's in an open format on data.gov, that's a completely different stakeholder group than transparency data for some of the watchdog groups out there that want the transparency data. Completely different groups with completely different desires, completely different needs for the formats of that data. And same thing goes for participation. When we talk about what participation is and what it makes and what makes it different than collaboration, participation tends to be just open to the general public, giving the general public an opportunity to participate in things like rulemaking. Collaboration is much more targeted based on solving specific business problems. But in each instance, you're dealing with a different population. And so, and really, if every single thing that the federal government did in the Open Government Directive was targeted at everybody, the benefit would be so dissolved that it would be really, really hard to make a cost-benefit analysis to keep it going.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm concerned, I guess, is that if it's kept on and kept on, then it's basically, there was a saying that in Washington that I picked up, you get these truisms you get from working there for so often. It's more like whoever has, when you're in a meeting and people are arguing about how to do it one way or another, then the person with the biggest bladder wins, because the other people go away, and then it's like, okay, we won. So you end up with, there's only two people in the room, and you both agree on something, and then you close the meeting, and then you can report, well, everybody in the room agrees that this is a great idea. So there is the danger of the fact that only the diehards will stick around, and then it may not be. So that,
And that's where I think, and to get to my second point that was embedded within your question, that's where I think that it, that we can't stress it enough, and a lot of people just say it to say it, but it has a lot of meaning within this statement, which is you shouldn't be doing much of anything within this space unless it ties to your mission. Because, for example, with this, with what we found, what a lot of organizations found when they were doing this just general solicitation for ideas out of the Open Government Initiative, I mean, you have ideas that are across the board coming in. I mean, the world. You basically open up any given organization's website to ideas, and you're going to get things that really aren't outwardly transparency, participation, or collaboration related, but can be anything that anybody has an idea on, which has a lot of value as we better understand how to manage such disparate topics that are coming in. But a lot of times, and the ways that the idea generation tools internally at organizations like at TSA and some of the others have worked the best, is when you actually target it on a specific business problem. And you say, let's get ideas around these specific issues. And you get people to hone kind of their intellectual capital on things that are a lot easier to put their hands around. So you get more people participating, and you also get better thought out ideas with the stakeholder population, really refining ideas that they can comment on, and not having things kind of, you know, on one hand you've got, you know, a truck safety comment coming in, and on the other hand you have bicycle issues with transit, and on the other hand, I mean, all over the board where those populations are so different that they're not commenting on each other's ideas. They don't know enough about each other's ideas,
right,
really, to comment on each other's ideas. So I can't stress enough that, like, right now we're seeing a lot of these kind of open format platforms that are these open discussions that just allow anyone to talk about anything.
Right.
But I think that over time people are going to realize that it needs to be much more targeted on specific things that we care about. And so you'll see more one and done, like we'll do a month on this, this engagement.
Well,
we'll do a month on this engagement. And
it is about engagement. People decide whether or not they want to be there. You can't beat the bushes and drag them out. So, and if you can make it a place where they want to be, then you will engage them. But if it's just build it and they will come, it's not going to work. There was one link related to this on the blog, U.S. Transparency blog for today. It's number 6, which is a test of leadership, where Brian Friel, who had been writing for years on this type of thing, has something about how suggestion systems, and also it would apply to engagement systems, where if you don't do it properly, then people won't use them. And he talks about the VA's system, about how they plucked 10 out and then threw the other 2,990 ideas away. And it's like, guess what? Maybe those people ain't going to come back the next time you ask for ideas. But we're getting very close to the end here, and I did want to just quickly say that there is an excellent, number 7, I would ask everybody listening to this to read this, an additional one from Government Executive Magazine. It's the same column, but different writer, Roger Swores, is Transparent Leadership. And there's a little excerpt there. I won't read it because we're running out of time. But it does apply to the idea that, to me, that a lot of, as we move forward, a lot of what's gone on needs to start coming out of the shadows. So a lot of brainstorming, you know, from last year and so forth needs to come out. And so people may have been talking to nonprofits and quote-unquote open government groups and so forth, but to me that needs to stop. To me that needs to, at some point you can't be having these inside baseball type of things. It has to come out into the light, because if this is all about making things transparent, then there can't be these secret meetings that people are still holding. And openthegovernment.org is link number 5. They have an evaluation program there. They're going to try to grade things. They're not looking at it as a compliance exercise, but they're going to try to grade it. But it still will be worthwhile to see what they come up with, because you'll be able to see if there's anything that, as far as a pattern goes, as far as these open government plans go. So the lady in my voice is saying we have probably about 30 seconds left. I appreciate you, Jen, coming on the program. Certainly, this is just the beginning, so I'm sure we'll be talking again about how things are going, and hopefully maybe we can get Todd Park to come on in the future. And this is Steve Buckley for Open Government Radio, and we'll see you next week when hopefully Beth Novick is tentatively scheduled to speak with us about the Open Government Initiative in the White House. Thanks again, Jen.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. And that's all for Open Government Radio today. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.